coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston. Say hello, Jedi Cole.
Good evening, everybody, or as I like to say, my recognition to new episode.
All right, right off the top, because she is indomitable. She is wise beyond her beauty, which is astounding regardless.
Couldn't agree more.
Incalculable. She is probably one of our favorite guests that we have ever had on this show, and we have been remiss not to have her on for about the last 10 months of episodes. That's 40 issues of Hey Kids Comics. Kelly Long
is with
us tonight. We are idiots that she's not on like every episode, but
indeed.
I'm here now.
Kelly,
but I'm
thank
here
you for
now.
Joining us.
Thank you for bringing me back. I appreciate it so much.
Are you
crazy?
Yeah,
this is like the opening of Smallville, like, somebody save me.
Oh,
so 40 really issues later.
Yeah.
After we whacked our way through the bush of trying to figure out, like, how to talk about a female comic book character in a meaningful, thoughtful way last week, we figured it's time to bring in the professional.
especially a character with such rich history, and there's just too much to talk about. This started out as a single issue, sprung into a double issue.
Yeah, she's too complex to cover in one episode, easily.
Yeah, at least we have that sense of wisdom.
Yeah.
So we have that going for us, I
quickly,
guess.
My naivete showed very quickly when I was started doing the research for this, and I reached out to Cole and said, we're gonna wanna break this one up a little bit. So, Kelly, let's because you didn't have the benefit of being here last week we kind of ran from the beginning, you know where Catwoman appeared as the cat in Batman number one, all the way up through basically the 70s. What is your relationship with the character? Like, where do you stand with that character?
So I remember as a very young person going to the Walgreens to purchase my monthly comics before I had discovered Jack Maverick's comic book store.
Mavericks.
Right? So, and I was a heavy Batman reader from the age of about 6. And Catwoman was different, and that puts me at, about 1985. Catwoman was very different in the 80s, and I remember my father taking me to Bonnet's, also a notable Dayton used bookstore.
Yes.
And he, you know, because I was young and I didn't realize at that moment how long have these characters been, because, you know, in my small amount of time with them at this point, 2 years, and he takes me in and he goes, you can pick out older comic books, and that's when I realized for the first time that Catwoman was a villain.
Oh, wow.
And I
also
didn't know that.
Nice. I want to point out also that you had mentioned the Walgreens, and I'd written ages ago about a period in my life when 7-Eleven was our comic store.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and that very much harkens back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I knew where to go. I just happened to see the spinner one time, and I walked there, you know, 2 or 3 blocks from my home to go get them on my own because I didn't want to ask. I didn't need to ask. I could just go get them on my own. And that moment when I was in Bonnet's, and you have to understand that Bonnet's is this dicey ass used store with that smoke, you know, the cigarette smoke patina on most of everything, notably the toys that were hanging from the ceiling that brought the man joy that now look like they came out of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre original film. So there's this smell and this cat and this my father, and who my father at the time, like, it was a very emotional time in my life because I was getting allergy shots for bee sting allergy. I was getting 9 shots a visit, so I wasn't in a good shape. So he was doing anything he could to placate me. And so we would go to he had this revelation to go to Bonnet's. And so, like, and the guy was super molesty that owned it. I was, like, not into it at all. However, I'm in this moment and I realize Catwoman is a villain and I didn't know what to do. And I actually got five different issues, and I forget the number, but Batman is, like, batarang-ing her feet together. It's this weird, again, it was a different time, so she's getting tied up and shit. But
speaking of molesty.
Yeah.
Molesty, right. But well, of course this guy owns this issue. And it's going home and just in reading these things, going, she's a villain. She's not, you know, and comparing it to what was going on in the current Walgreens selections. it was a moment. It was a moment of that duality of who are we? And here I am, a 7-year-old trying to figure out, well, why is she a villain and not a villain? Which is pretty much people.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or like,
Oh, and also I think that speaks very well to the nature of the character, who is constantly waffling back and forth between the two roles.
Right, right. Nobody knows what side she's on.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't even know. If you read the comics, you know, she doesn't even know what side she's on from issue to issue or, you know, day to day, week to week. So.
Which is probably why people love her so much.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, this is, being in the modern era, the ideal point where I can bring up having there was a wonderful, I wish I could remember which issue, I think it was in Detective Comics, was either in Detective or Batman at that stage, because there were only a couple of titles, not the 9 or 10 that would emerge over the years, but there was a wonderful sort of this just one shot story where Batman and Catwoman go on a date.
Hmm.
As mm-hmm. Batman and Catwoman, and
right,
and they're like, it's fun, it's romantic. They're trading barbs like old friends, you know, long time, on again, off again,
right,
romance. And then I'm like, this is amazing. The story is amazing. The writing, the art, everything about it. I'm getting the next issue. And the next issue, it's Catwoman viciously fighting Batman and Robin,
mm-hmm.
like the prior issue never happened.
Right.
Nor was it even in any way acknowledged. There was no mention of this sudden turn or anything. And it's just like, okay.
Right.
I know she goes back and forth, but, you know, and I think they would go on to, like, it was written off in that story as Dr. Moon had hypnotized her. But it's like, yeah, we'd like some coverage of that. Let's build to it, you know?
Right.
I'd like a little something akin to a, you know, give me some writer's foreplay or something there just certainly to lead into it. Because otherwise it was too abrupt. It was almost like, what do we got laying around? We need a story this month.
Well, but that's Catwoman, though. That's what they've been doing with her. It depends on who was writing her. But then you know, later on, we come along with, like, Darwyn Cook, who actually, like, put some time into her and plucked some things out and actually gave her something that wasn't just some hoochie costume. because, frankly, part of my frustrations with DC and Catwoman is this weird Mary Magdalene thing that they've thrown on her. You know, here is this woman that is all of these things to this major character in their universe, and they treat her, they throw things at, like, the dominatrix stuff that happened, and all the, you know, like, some of those weird years where her body was just drawn in such a horrible way, and they vilify her when she's no longer a villain.
That's an interesting point, because she does become sort of like the fanboy wet dream during like it was like during the 80s or 90s when she gets her own title, the skin tight purple outfit and the largest breast she will ever have in her entire history.
Could possibly carry that chest with that.
Well, especially and still be acrobatic. It was like a reverse Weeble.
You said something interesting, which is, you know, they vilify her for that. But the other really interesting thing about the vilification of Catwoman is I think that she's more vilified for... They always write her as giving a shit about Batman, giving a shit about Bruce Wayne, right? Giving, you know, caring about that, seeing through the rich Corinthian leather patina that exists, you know, on the outside of Batman and seeing the man under the mask and, yes. Committing the crimes to get him to chase her so that she can spend time with him and he's doing right. it, you know, to spend time with her. And, you know, there's this, right. you know, Sam and Diane thing that's gone on forever. But I think she's more vilified for that.
Yeah.
Than she is. She's more vilified for that almost than she is for being a woman in a comic book.
So true. And that, I think, is part and parcel to that weird, sudden Dr. Mooney shift thing there that happened. Yeah. Because it's sort of like, oh, can't have that.
Right. Somebody wakes up one day and says, okay, she's, you know, we've done 10 issues. We've done a year of her and Batman on again, off again, flirting, you know, making dates and breaking dates and showing up. And then she'll go, you know, rob a museum. But, you know, she's being forced to do it. And Batman has to figure that out. And then she says, right. Does Batman believe her? Does Batman not believe her? And then after 10 or 12 issues, nope, she's a bad guy again. Like, she's a full-on mob boss now. Or, in the case of Frank Miller, straight prostitute. Like, what?
Straight up, messed up. What the fuck
what?
Is that?
Well, yeah, I think absolutely. That what Miller did with Catwoman, with Selina Kyle, was almost, in a way, it was the same sort of approach, but in an opposite turn, in that he took the best possible... You know, he's actually said that to him with Daredevil, it just seemed that Daredevil had to be Catholic mm-hmm. because, you know, there was something implicit in the way he'd always been written. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was sort of like, well, she got a whip. She must be a dominatrix prostitute.
Right, right.
Because who other than Indiana Jones uses a whip, and she ain't Indiana Jones.
But it doesn't even end there. Like, they take that Frank Miller thing and this weird sexuality, like the Shadow of the Bat. Let's revisit that series in the 90s, you know. And that's when she shows up in that purple with those thigh-high boots.
Oh, the boots, yes, of course.
That, if you're a cat burglar, is the least respectable footwear. You're not going to be able to do anything in those things. Like, you're making her this not what she is. You know, even if she's a cat burglar, yeah, she's a cat, whatever. But nothing. That's what frustrates me a lot with comics in how they portray women is, yeah, maybe she has a whip, but then she's completely not wearing something that makes sense.
So you hit a really interesting note there. There's a really great chord there, which is that's not who she is. But that's the issue that we have with Catwoman from the beginning is that nobody knows who she is. Cole and I was speaking to this in the prior issue of Hey Kids Comics, which is, you know, if Cole and I could record the conversations we have before we record, we would have better shows than we do than we sit down to record. but I went on about a 10-minute, just shocking, I know, to you, Kelly, diatribe rant, just yelling on my front porch about the fact that you get, when you are born, you get imprinted with the genetic code for Batman. You get a style sheet for who Batman is, what Batman is, from the day that you're born, and that's been Batman. And no matter how far you deviate, whether you slap Robin in the Batmobile and say, I'm the goddamn Batman, or you get married to Selina Kyle, you're still, the rules apply. You know, the rules of the Batman universe apply to Batman at all times. It's like gravity, you know, it's like the laws of velocity and mass. Batman is Batman. You don't have those rules for Catwoman because they've never taken the time to develop Superman, Batman, Captain America, Iron Man for Catwoman. So Catwoman's always just been this, for better or worse, and in some respects there's a part of me, and probably this is a sexist thing to say, that I think it's kind of cool – that they have a filter, a lens with which to look at the movement through a character, which is kind of what they've done if they're smart, and you get that glimpse into Catwoman every once in a while. But the other side is she's never been the greatest thing that you can do for a quote-unquote female comic book character is let that character exist in its own world.
Right.
And they haven't done that with Catwoman, I don't think.
No,
they're
no,
getting
no.
there.
And weirdly, they have taken so much care with the Bat family. You can look at – you remember that it was like War on Crime or something. It was a three-part graphic novel series, and there was like Tarantula was there and Spoiler and all of these other women that were afforded some bit of characterization that provided them with being tough, provided them with being realistic human beings that treated others with dignity and still kicking ass. But Catwoman hasn't been able to do that because of this that weird vilifying. Nobody vilified Spoiler even when she went crazy.
Now, that's a good point. And of course, there is perhaps it goes back to her Jean Harlow roots that Catwoman over the years is the target of hypersexualization.
True.
Because, you know, she was born of a kind of, for lack of a better term, fanboy tribute
yep.
to Harlow as the sole strong inspiration. And she can't escape that. She goes from, like, you know, the dress with the slit all the way up to the thigh and again, thigh-high boots to, you know, constant changes in her physiology. Where she,
yeah.
Apparently constantly changes body type. And, you know, ultimately into about a decade into the leather cat suit with the little hood and the goggles.
Right, right.
That, you know, it's just sort of like you've gone to a steampunk burlesque or something.
Yeah. She, you know, also, like, looking at Catwoman in these roles with her costuming, if you take a step back and look at her as in a relationship with Batman, it's, you know, we're not talking about Vicki Vale or Nocturna. And I'm going to try and bring up Nocturna as much as I can because that's what I do. Because I freaking love Nocturna. But, you know, but she's not this blip character. And, you know, Vicki Vale wasn't even really something that anybody remembered. She just happened to be the character they used in that first Batman movie with Tim Burton. People remember that. The rest of them, they're like, yeah, they don't have any idea. But Catwoman is a consistent, acceptable relationship for the grumpiest man on the planet.
I think she's the only one who can, you know, tolerate him.
Certainly. She understands because she understands all the factors. But we're back to that vilifying her for that.
Yes. Well, it's almost like as a character, she can't get cut a break.
No, she can't.
You know, we can't allow her to fully redeem herself to walk away from the life of crime.
Right. Or even anything that would be considered shady that is somehow, for some reason, considered empowerment. And my example in this point is, so everybody remembers when Batman Year One came out, the video, not necessarily the comic. Comic's great, but the DVDs would come out and they would have an extra little short in them, which those were my favorites because they had one with the Spectre and stuff like, oh, yeah, bring it on. Oh, man, Catwoman has a short. There is probably a good 2 minutes in that cartoon of her on a pole stripping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed.
And that is when I lost my mind. What? That's all you got? For real?
And no, it's like, is this like the plot line that got rejected from Heavy Metal? Or?
Right, exactly. You know, there's all that cool stuff with Holly, with the sister. There's all that cool stuff like she fights, you know, the Robin Hood and giving it back to the poor and stealing things so she can spend time with Batman. There's all of these reasons that she is cool, and you go with stripping. Super disappointed sometimes with their choices
and
on her.
You know, while we're talking about this kind of area of Catwoman and creators, right? Because Frank Miller, I think we've kind of established the fact that you get two choices when you're a woman and you're with Frank Miller. you're either a dominatrix or a nun. That's all you get. There's no it's binary. It's absolutely.
I don't know about when they came out with Dark Knight Returns 2, I was like, I don't know if I want to open that book.
It's literally like you're a nun or you're a prostitute. There's nothing in between there. There's
nothing else.
Nothing else exists. Just look at Sin City. Look at, you know, you're literally 300.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a literal translation of prostitute.
It is a literal.
But there was a really great story that I want to touch base on, and I want to jump back and talk about Crisis, because I know Cole can. I know Cole can do that. Cole, it's an hour show.
Okay.
Keep that in mind. But there was an issue, and if Cole gets to talk about Crisis, guess who I get to talk about? I get to talk about Grant Morrison. Deal with it. Make your own show, cowards. I went all day long thinking I was going to call somebody a coward on this show. I don't know why. Okay, so are you both fairly familiar with the villain Prometheus?
Yes.
I'm aware of him, not necessarily familiar.
Okay, so he's fairly dated at this point, but he's got a little...
one with the steam whistles on either side of his head.
That's him. Okay. But he's got a little... CD-ROM drive in the side of his helmet that he can extrapolate and download like all the power sets from any, you know, he's sort of the Deathstroke cyberpunk analog where he can, you know, get all these powers and put them in his head and then he can kind of think five steps ahead and he, you know,
so it's kind of Taskmaster-esque.
Yeah, I would say that's probably accurate. But so there was a big unveiling of the Watchtower on the moon. This was like Grant Morrison's JLA issues running like 15 through 18. And we talked about, and I think Kelly might have been on the show when we talked about Grant Morrison's JLA and how they were representative of the Pantheon with Superman and Batman. And he goes on to talk about Hades and Zeus and how he made those, you know, he picked them for that distinction. But Prometheus sneaks onto this giant press junket for the express purpose of taking out the JLA and taking over the Watchtower. Well, Catwoman sneaks onto the Watchtower in the guise of Cat Grant. The newest member of the JLA was Green Arrow, but at the time it was Connor. It wasn't It wasn't Steve Amell. It wasn't, you know, I am I forget the intro to the Arrow show at this point. You would think I would never forget it.
It was rather drilled into your head for about three seasons.
Right. But Catwoman ends up saving the day because of the fact that, and I think this is Grant Morrison's kind of brilliance. She ends up saving the day because she isn't defined. Because she doesn't have a definition, almost like that Deadpool Taskmaster fight where you can't identify what I'm going to do next because I'm insane. She does not have that that predetermined idea of what's going to happen so that she saves the day, which I think in a way is Grant Morrison. We've talked about how deep into the well Grant Morrison can go. I think after a fashion, that might be a slight thumb in the eye to anybody who's created and written for Catwoman in the past. Now, she becomes a short-lived member of the Justice League and fights alongside them. But it was a really cool concept and idea that she was the one that saved the day. But that's all I got on that.
Now, well, and also, you know, one of the great strengths of this show is the different experiences, different exposure to the various stories that are out there. So we have a whole lot of there's a lot of diversity in this, and so, you know, like personally, I was not familiar with that story. So
Grant Morrison, and, dude.
I just feel like I have to really catch up on my Grant Morrisons from here on out.
Grant Morrison did a lot of awesome stuff. Like
very, very clearly.
I think we lost Kelly for the time being.
Yeah, I'm afraid we have lost our audio.
But she's I could see the video of her trying to talk. It's horrifying. I feel. Oh, yeah. There she is.
There you go. There you go. I'm back.
All right. What were you really passionately gesturing about a second ago,
yeah,
Kelly?
Yeah, that was a very valid point you were making, even if we couldn't.
I know. I'm so smart.
That was brilliant because, I mean,
you
could tell that there was just such knowledge and passion.
I know. I researched this stuff. Yeah.
Bring that Marcel Marceau game into my house.
I'm so going to steal that if we ever do a video you know, if we get to a situation where I have a video feed, and then if I get a loss, I'm going to hit the mute button and feign a signal.
Just be like, was I on mute?
I get it.
I'm sorry, was I on mute?
Yeah.
I just said the most interesting thing you've ever heard. I was
repeated. It just left my brain.
I know.
So Kelly, what were you? What point were you making there?
What was I talking about? The Grant Morrison fleshes people out, that he, in his crazy, insane mind, sees everybody from a different angle, and that is refreshing, for the most part, for female characters in general.
Right. So if you can let him get his hands on...
I would be very interested to see what he would do with her in a whole, like, a whole graphic novel, a series kind of situation.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I feel like I'm on a Greek urn right now. Yes,
Or even something like Birds of Prey, because I really loved Birds of Prey, and wish they had brought her more into that. And they did, you know, because Gotham is like this weird crapshoot of, you know, characters they like to throw in there. Well, like, you know what would be really awesome here? Lady, you know, let's get Poison Ivy together. Like, they just be friends, and then Oracle, and, you know, I'm never going to forgive them for taking away Oracle, by the way, because I really loved
It was
Oracle.
Such a great affirmation of Barbara Gordon's character.
Absolutely.
It took her and put her in the worst possible place for who she was and said, damn it, I'm still going to fight the good fight.
I'm still viable. If that happened to Catwoman, that would not be the case.
Yeah, well, I mean, how do you wear the thigh-high boots?
Well, you can, but you just have your aid boom on.
Yeah, just not as effectively. So, and it's damn difficult to be a cat burglar as well.
Right.
Because that puts a lot of pressure on your aid. Because they have to go, you know, once you...
I don't know, what kind of clause do you have to sign in your contract to help?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I'm not giving up my career.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Well, how long do you wait before you tell your aide that that's part of the job? Like,
that's part of the deal.
Like a week, maybe a week and a half in, be like, listen, we need to take a drive tonight.
After the background check comes clean.
Right.
I think I'm liking what I'm seeing here, so I need you to take me to the Batcave.
Right.
No, what? It's not like Mordor. You don't just walk in.
You're like, no.
I thought we were going to swim therapy.
And it's Aquaman.
Oh, wow.
Kelly, what do you know about, because I don't know. Okay, so this is a blind spot I have in my comic book knowledge that always was the comic, for some reason, and maybe you can turn me the corner on this, maybe not. The comic always was kind of a turnoff for me. But where do you stand, or what do you know about Gotham City Sirens as a comic book?
Rough. Oh. Not Birds of Prey. It's like wannabe Birds of Prey. Let's make them all friends. And I don't like it. I don't. It's not that I don't believe that women can be friends, because I know women can be friends, and I know that women can have supportive relationships, but I don't know if I would go with those people for supportive relationships.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, Poison Ivy uses poison to control people. I don't know if that's really the person that I'm really like, you know what, I need to throw some feels at you and have a shoulder to
Yeah, who do I know that's really manipulative? That's who I want to talk to right now.
And Harley Quinn. Let's just go with somebody who, is literally been fried. So tough. It's a tough thing. I don't necessarily care for it. I loved the idea, but I don't know if I would go with Gotham as the grittiest place in the DC universe to find supportive relationships.
It becomes a strange bedfellows kind of situation, yeah. Because, I mean, when you're in, like, crazy town, you don't have a lot of choices for solid, turn to in moments of need friendships.
Right, and it just turns out to, for me, it feels like this weird fanboy fantasy again. Oh, let's just put these together and they can have, like, sleep in cute little pajamas in the same room or something, and it's weird.
Yeah, it's like the only downside to an otherwise just almost flawless story, which was Arkham Asylum Living Hell, was... You know, the women inmates all had to run around and, like, you know, repurposing their kind of orange jumpsuits into sexy little tank tops and stuff.
Right.
Like midriff shirts. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's prison.
Yeah, exactly. It may be the crazy house, but it's still, you know, they've got some decorum there.
I feel like we're jumping all over the place a little bit. That's okay. You know me. I'm fine with that. And there's one thing. Just remind me when we get into the, you know, as we roll through here, I do want to touch on Crisis. I do want to touch on on what's happening, you know, what's happening now, what's happened in the last 10 years. But the last thing I kind of want to do is talk about appearance in the media. Now, we've already talked about, you know, the Batman 66 TV show ad nauseum and the, you know, the portrayal by Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns.
Heather Locklear.
But there's one thing in particular that I want to talk about that I don't know. But we'll do that later. But Cole, your knowledge of Crisis on Infinite Earths is vast and is ever growing like the cosmos.
Well, and not at all. Ironically, the Crisis on Infinite Earths was literally my entree into the DC Universe. It was a wonderful turning point because I was a make mine Marvel kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I would buy the occasional or come across the occasional DC comic. Like, my grandmother had a bunch of comics she had there to keep us occupied, and one of them was Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen.
Nice.
And you know, I was just hardcore that Marvel was the way to go. And then I was practically, my friend Steve just practically browbeat me until I begrudgingly read Crisis. And then I was like, oh my God, because this was concurrent with the Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Shooter, I'm afraid, lost it with his adolescence of, you know.
Is that what he calls his mirror full of cocaine? Adolescence?
Was because
was a brilliant. He had a brilliant creative mind, made less brilliant by the cocaine plants.
He really went all in. You know, it was like backstage at Saturday Night Live in the early days.
Oh, speaking of Jim Shooter, though, completely off topic. And if you guys don't know yet. I'm going to hip you to the jive. There is a Cole and I think have discussed it at some point. There is a web movie being released in 20-minute increments called Valiant or Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe.
Okay.
I'd heard that there was supposed to be a Ninjak movie in the works at some point.
And it is being released as of now. So it is out there for you to watch. As of Sunday, all 20-minute increments are going to be out, and you can watch it. But it looks campy, but amazing. So if you are interested in watching Ninjak, the white British ninja. Speaking of appropriation,
especially if you're a fan of that sword that Sulu had in the real.
Oh yeah.
Correct. You can see the character who originated the collapsible katana.
It's nice. It looks fantastic, but I digress. So Cole, are you familiar with the Catwoman piece of the action from Crisis, can you summon up that knowledge?
Well, I recall that what was interesting is the Crisis, especially, I think it was the number 7, if memory serves, and somebody's probably like, no, that was 9 or whatever, but where, you know, you start the Crisis where everybody's pulling together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And for the common good, you get this great panoramic shot of damn near everybody that was anybody in the DCU, hero or villain, all gathered together in, before Alexander Luthor. And at some point, and it's been a while since I've read the damn thing, there was the issue titled The Villain War.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of like this turning point where all the villains are like, you know, this is our time. It was like, you know, the first act of Warriors. Only without an assassination. It was just they decide they're going to team up and just use this opportunity of distraction to mm-hmm. wage all-out war and take over the world. And the fact that characters like Catwoman are invited into the fold speaks very highly of the place that the character has, you know, and the sort of like, how did Hawkeye get the Avengers sort of thing.
You know, Cole, that's incredibly interesting because I was actually just thinking about this, right? Much akin to that, anytime that you have Catwoman in a situation where it's like the Injustice Gang or, you know, any of the big cabal type situations, she's the bridge too far character because inevitably, like, Brainiac gets up in front of this group's like, all right, Justice League has been foiling us at every turn for 50 years, and all the villains are like, yeah. And he's like,
he's like, I'm Brainiac, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And so,
I can't die.
And so I got a plan, and everybody's like, yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to kidnap the Justice League, and everybody's like, yeah. And then we're going to take control of the Watchtower, and everybody's like, yeah. And then we're going to cut their brains out, and Catwoman's like, nope. No. I'm just gonna slink into the shadows back here, disappear, show up at Gotham Manor, and just put a bug in Batman's ear real quick. She's always been that line, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the place where she does get some due reverence, is that you find writers who, you know, recognize her as she's not the mindless brute that a lot of the villains become. She does have a Jack Sparrow-esque moral compass that she can bring into play. But also that, you know, at the same time, she is a respected, she's like a legacy. You know, you can't have a villain team without inviting Catwoman. Well, why do we need Catwoman? Why don't we need Catwoman? What's wrong with you? Like, nothing. She doesn't have any powers, and she probably has her great glass cutter if you want to open, you know, get into the windows or stuff. But
you need something for a caper?
Yeah,
she's your lady.
Exactly. You know, from the finance standpoint, I guess.
why do they keep inviting her back if every time, like, wait a second, we get real close when Catwoman's not here and then Superman shows up and foils us. We can't fault ourselves for that. He's a god among men. Yet every time Catwoman is in the room with us and we hatch and devise these plans, within 30 seconds, the Justice League is ripping the roof off the place.
Yeah, why? And, you know, we really ought to think about jamming cell phone service in our headquarters because there's something going on. But that same sort of invitation, that open invitation that Catwoman gets above most of your godlike villains, mm-hmm. is carried over brilliantly in Kingdom Come.
Oh yeah.
Where Lex Luthor is assembling and addressing this group that includes presumably Damian Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
As Ibn Nick says, a.k.a. Son of the Bat.
I'm so impressed with you right now, Cole. I'm a little heated.
I aim to please. And,
can I? Get, you know, can I? But however, can I get that with Tazeek?
Absolutely. And it's one of my favorite dishes when I go, you know, when you go to the buffet and they're all out of it, but they're falafel, then you're like, hey, what gives here? You know, I don't, there's nothing like the scrapings in the steam tray. But they,
and then a bunch of hand ninjas show up.
That's right.
I didn't know this League of Assassins.
Are you ever planning to refill this? But, you know, you had Lord Naga, a.k.a. Cobra. You had...
the best buffet ever.
Hell yeah, Al Ghul shows up and says she's going to take my seat again. I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
I'm not really sure. Am I like... is it like one of those things in the back of the comics where I could, like, earn a really cool AM radio if I sell these seeds? Or... oh!
You might get hostess care.
Yeah, very different.
Is it Arbor Day already?
Yeah, and then... yeah. You know, how many conceptions occur on Arbor Day? It's just staggering. You could just, like, 9 months after Arbor Day, it's another baby boom.
I'm sorry, but, I'm proud of that one.
Okay. You should be. That was top shelf there, sir.
Thank you.
But, you know, the thing is, you're going around the table, and Edward Nigma and Selina Kyle are there.
Yeah.
And Luther makes it quite clear that Nigma is there solely as a conceit to Selina.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whoa, in one sentence, they underscore precisely what her place is in the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
She has Lex Luthor's undying respect, and that is one of those points where she's elevated out of the cat suits and the sexuality and the bull whips
and yeah
the, your cat's 09 tails.
I think that
well there's moments where I think that people in like Kingdom Come are referencing like remember like Earth 2, she's the mother of Huntress,
right?
That's so true. Yeah,
you know. And she, you know, like, and I love that version of Huntress, and I love that version of Catwoman, and how, like, yeah, at one point, yeah, Catwoman and Bruce Wayne did get married. They had a kid. This is what happened. But it's okay. It's just Earth 2, so we can go back to him
being
the dude on the planet.
Are the chances they'll ever meet before the...
Exactly. But Huntress, one of my other favorites. Yeah, you did that. Huntress, here comes Huntress from Catwoman and Batman, and how she's mad, you know, for everything that Selina Kyle gets vilified for sexually, Huntress gets vilified for her anger, her righteous anger.
Well, she's
actually.
The nun.
Yeah, she's the nun.
Yeah, she's the Frank Miller nun. Yeah.
Right. So that's always interesting to me. But then you can, when you look at the Long Halloween and how that's different, because then she just becomes part of the mob family.
Yeah, and she does have a long and sordid career with organized crime as well.
Yeah. So.
What would be interesting to see going forward, because this character with a 70 or 80 year history, which in itself is staggering. I mean, granted, there's that period where she sort of falls in the 50s, where she falls out of existence along with a lot of the more classic Bat villains.
Right.
That you, you know, even with that, you discount that. It's half a century minimum. It would be interesting to see where the character is taken now that they've taken this turn toward the impending nuptials. Saw the announcement in the Gotham papers the other day. The Kyle Wayne vows to be heard, and where can this take her in her evolution? And will writers take up the standard and begin to bring her into her full potential? Because she is one of the potential strongest characters out there. It's like there's this kind of the potential energy is vast and the kinetic energy is kind of, you know, fanboy sex dream.
My argument here is this, is that we're finally starting to see there's this, in my opinion, really cool turn it on its ear movement, at least an undercurrent of this movement happening in media right now, where you see the true power behind the power, right? Mm-hmm. And you saw that in, you know, the first place I remember really seeing it, and then starting to see it, you know, Bader Meinhofing it everywhere, was House of Cards,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, for better or worse, we're gonna say the name on the show, Kevin Spacey, you know, was mm-hmm. the senator, was the, you know, the president at one point. But Robin Wright was the true power in that relationship.
Right, right.
And you start to see it in things like, you know, across all media, Jessica Jones.
Sure.
And,
God, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, in the comics, married to Luke Cage. But the real stability, the real power,
right.
the real maturity is in her, is in Jessica Jones. You know, you're seeing it in Superman with Lois Lane, mm-hmm. you're seeing it
yep.
in, you know, in your Marvel comics as well. You're starting to actually see it. Miracle Man, not Miracle Man, Big Barda and Mr.
Barda.
Miracle.
Oh, Mr. Miracle,
yeah. Yeah, that new comic. You're starting to see this unfold, and I'm hoping that we're going to see a continuation of that in this. Because the dynamic, the really cool thing about the Batman-Superman dynamic in the past year has been Batman and, you know, Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle slash Batman and Catwoman. And
mm-hmm.
they know their own secret identities. They know who they are, right? There's no hiding that. So
mm-hmm.
they start dating for real. They decide they're going to give it a real shot. So they've been dating. But much like, you know, older couples have, they have a you know, they go on couple dates. And they go on couple
right.
dates with Clark and Lois.
Adorable. Adorable.
And I love that.
And the best part about it is Clark and Bruce are two children. They're two man children, right?
Right.
And the real adult relationship there is Lois and Selina.
Right.
Like while Batman and Superman pick at each other the whole time. Because they've been friends forever. Like, of course
yeah.
they would.
Right, of course.
They're brothers.
I'm going to bring up something here that I think maybe we can insert this into not just Catwoman, but all of our female characters. And as time has been moving on and women stepping up and gaining more equality, if you will, there is this concept called emotional labor. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but it's actually – I recognize this because I am a woman with a family and with – So emotional labor is the time that a woman spends thinking in the back of her mind while doing something. Maybe we're driving to the store, or we're going to pick up something, but it is, okay, I need to do the laundry. I need to make sure that form is signed. I need to make sure that Roger calls German Township because there was an accident in his front yard. And it's all of these things while I'm doing something. It is this consistent narrative in the back of women's minds that we all do because we have responsibilities. And it can be for work, it can be for the family, it can be for the kid, it can be for the dog, but it's all going on at the same time simultaneously. And so when you bring up stuff that Bruce and Clark are man children, and that the real power are these women. And it is these women that are making sure, did you remember that you're now going out as your secret identity?
yeah, did you
take off the bat. You're going to you need to put your tuxedo on. You're going to work, Clark. Did you call your mother? You know, have
exactly.
you written a birth card? Have you paid your taxes? Because there's all this stuff that men forget. No offense, bros, that women.
So what is this? I you piqued my curiosity about this responsibility of which you speak.
Right. Can you elaborate further?
Yeah.
We'd be
somewhat interested.
Yeah, but what if now they're starting to put this into these characters? That would be very interesting.
Well, there's another part of that dynamic that I think we really need to look at. If we're talking about, Cole mentioned, what does this mean for the character going forward? This means that the character is now part and parcel Wayne Industries.
Oh, yeah.
That's so true. And the Wayne Foundation.
Right.
And this can help, you know, bring something to the table in both situations, depending on how well the writers take up that you know, that particular standard.
Yeah.
So they've been doing it. I think that the new this and we talk about how we're going to see this erosion of the old way of thinking.
Yeah.
Right, as these new writers come up and as these new writers take over and as the old writers retire and go into editor roles, and you know, we're seeing the sea change, the evolution, you know.
Right.
And of course 20 years or 30 years from now we're going to look back at what we consider, you know, a positive force of change and be like, God, how did we even live with ourselves looking at this?
Right.
Now
absolutely But look at it. What if we go back to the Mary Magdalene construct here? What if she's not
Ladies and gentlemen, this is why we invite Kelly on the show.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm bringing it back. So what if we look at Catwoman as in a similar vein as Mary Magdalene? She's not the prostitute. The church finally comes forward and says, no, we made that up. That wasn't really true. We just used that to control you. And here they have this dynamic with Batman as being a really weird Jesus Christ. How many times has that guy come back from the dead?
I want a shirt that says Batman, really weird Jesus Christ.
It's right. Jesus Christ. But here,
Pontius Pilate was actually Bane.
Oh, God, that
made Oddly
me.
Enough, the Spear of Destiny was still the Spear of Destiny. It was
the
same.
Yeah, that was strange. It was just across all continuity.
But here is this person that maybe women, yeah, it's part of Wayne Foundation, it's part of Bruce, it's part of what, maybe he isn't the spirit of vengeance anymore. Maybe he doesn't have to be, because this human element, this woman, fulfills that hole in his soul that vengeance will never fill.
That's a really good point. In fact, I was thinking that what I would like to see is literally an evolution into the Batman Catwoman team.
Yes.
And they go and fight crime as a couple, almost. And you see a little bit, you know, the edges begin to wear off.
Yeah.
And perhaps even more effective Batman without carrying the burden of guilt and of just this undying need for vengeance.
How many years do you need to cover the vengeance?
Yes, and how many have to fall? And at what point did the vengeance fall out of the equation? And it's more about, you know, that dynamic of, does the presence of the Batman open the door? Is that the catalyst for your Jokers and your Mad Hatters and your Tweedledee and Tweedledum? You know, did the one give birth to the other, or did they just happen to share the same birthday?
Right. And also, like, how many times has Batman made the situation infinitely worse by being Batman, Tower of Babel, okay? Where, you know, like...
OMAC, yeah, just any, you know, of them.
Any of those times. There are infinite amounts of times where Batman was so prepared, he screwed everybody over big time. What if he didn't have to be that way anymore?
Yeah, and can she take those edges off? Is she going to be that guiding force that says, Bruce, it's okay.
Yeah.
The fight goes on, but let's try a different approach.
No, but you already accomplished all of that.
Yeah.
So why hold on?
Yeah, I mean, is it your fault that every time all of your rogues gallery are incarcerated, Rajal Ghul comes and, you know, opens the floodgates again and lets everybody loose?
Catwoman give Batman the opportunity to be different than Superman. Like, Superman changed. Superman went through all those changes because they're like, Superman's boring because he's so, you know, he's nigh invulnerable. So let's do all this stuff. And everybody is like, eh, because they're ridiculous. but then he ends up coming back with a little bit of foible. He has, and it's not just his emotional foibles, but he's not invulnerable anymore. And that's why he's interesting. Batman's interesting because he doesn't have superpowers, but they've turned him into this machine.
Right.
Well, and the undercurrent of paranoia.
Right.
Where he's so paranoid he can't trust even his friends.
Right.
It's like, I love Clark dearly, but I don't trust him as far as I could spit him.
Right.
And have you seen the man? He's like 12 stone. I couldn't spit him very far.
But that's the cool thing about the books now, is that you're seeing that bond between, not just between Selina and Bruce, not between Catwoman and Batman, but you're seeing Batman build that bond with Clark. You know, you're seeing Batman, because keep in mind, in current continuity, Damian is Batman's son,
right?
Well, right. Superman has a kid too, and they go on and they take the kids on play dates. like they're starting to develop Batman into a, like you said, less, you know, fourth meal, I am the knight, wins it enough, God. This is why we run character,
right.
Into a more well-rounded, you know, I do this for the, you know, I do this as a, instead of out of vengeance, you know, maybe out of duty, maybe because I can, maybe because I have the resources, maybe it's hope, maybe it's because I can help, but it's
right.
Not, I have to do this, you know, I have to do this grind, you know, in
right.
order to solve a problem and make the puzzle pieces fit anymore. So,
right.
All right. So I got one more thing and then we got to get out of here.
Yep.
All right.
And I've been waiting all night to ask this question. We touched on this early on in this issue. Well, not early on, about a half hour ago. We talked about the Huntress being the daughter of Bruce and Selina on Earth 2. I want to talk about an analogous Catwoman in the TV show Birds of Prey.
Oh no!
Oh wow!
Does anybody remember the TV show Birds of Prey?
I remember Birds of Prey. I had very high hopes for that.
I love it. I couldn't help it. Well, they couldn't use Catwoman for the same reason they can't use Batman in the Gotham TV show, right?
Right.
Licensing.
Yeah.
So they used the Huntress. Well, it's the same reason they couldn't put Batman in Arrow. You know, Arrow is Batman the TV show without Batman.
Without the knight. Yeah.
So it was the same idea, but it had the Huntress, who was essentially Catwoman. It was essentially essentially Birds of Prey, because if memory serves, they had a Black Canary.
Okay. Yeah, they did.
Yes, they did. In fact, they actually did not live in abject fear of her having some kind of superpower, which up until very recently, television and the superhero had this sort of awkward relationship where they really did not want to speak to one another at full, that led to like 9 seasons of No Flights, No Tights, and then they realize, okay, this is getting tiresome with Smallville. So, you know, for her, some character encountering Black Canary and getting all excited, so you got the canary, you inherited the canary cry? I'm like, God bless you. It was almost like, you know, the voice of fandom saying, at last, we acknowledge that a superhero can be a superhero. We don't have to castrate them for television.
Right.
But the show was pretty interesting, and keep in mind, they used Helena Kyle. This is an Earth 2 TV show.
Yes.
Yeah. She was the daughter of Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah.
Yet, oddly enough, Barbara Gordon still existed, but she was Oracle. So she
there's some liberties. There were some liberties.
If I recall, in the premiere or at some point, they actually had her done up in, like, you know, the away game version of Alicia Silverstone's Batgirl costume. So they actually did a thing and suggested the Joker.
No, they did. They absolutely kind of went through that story in, you know, very briefly, but they did go through it.
Yeah, at least paid some tribute or acknowledgement.
God, it was so weird and good. I was so.
But I had forgotten that it was the Earth 2 Huntress.
Earth 2, bring it on, as far as I'm concerned.
But the cast was. The show had so much promise. The cast was great. You had a legitimate, cool ass for the first time ever, and probably the last time because of the way things are going. Harley Quinn in the form of Mia Friggin Sarah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was very It was very upsetting to me. It was very upsetting that it didn't.
I understand.
It didn't go as well as it should have. But that's okay.
But also partly the time. I think the timing that it came out. I think it would be better now because you have more DC stuff out there, regardless of whether or not it's good DC stuff. Suicide Squad. There is stuff out there that they're trying. You know, they don't. Warner Brothers does not have the foresight that Marvel and Disney have. Period. Across the board. And that's my greatest argument when it comes to DC movies.
Well, they wanted instant Avengers.
Right, and you can't do that.
Was playing a long game.
Yeah, DC exactly.
Jealously looked at that and said, "Oh, we can do that in two movies."
Right, and it's just not possible. But DC's TV show game is strong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, much stronger than Marvel. And Netflix.
Right, and if Birds of Prey came out now on the CW, I bet it would. I bet it would work.
Good night. It would have, because it would be drawing from the successes of other shows, realizing both from Marvel and DC camps that if you get that the fans, you can address the fans and still be approachable to the uneducated.
Hawkman and Hawkgirl and Legends of Tomorrow, they can do Birds of Prey.
Exactly.
One bit of trivia, and then we're going to wrap this up. I did not know this, but in the pilot episode of the Birds of Prey TV show, you're absolutely right, Cole. They do revisit that storyline where the Joker, you know.
Yes, they actually kind of invoke, if not, they certainly don't try to recreate, but they invoke the Killing Joke.
They invoke the Killing Joke. Not only that, but the Joker appears and is voiced by Mark Hamill. I did not know that's one of the times. Yeah.
I
know
him.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I didn't either. That's pretty amazing. So that means that if I ever meet Mark Hamill. I can get him to sign a Birds of Prey headshot and really make his day. I'm sure he's been waiting on that.
Do you know that I have a Leonard Nimoy book of poetry that I make famous people sign?
No, but that's...
Oh, wow!
Yeah, it was printed in like 78, so it's really nice. Got some.
Right up there with the guy that would go around to conventions and commission artists to draw Gambit fighting alligators.
Find that guy, Cole.
I know. I wish I could track him down. I think I remember his name.
Yeah.
Last name.
You know who was the most hilarious? The most hilarious was Wallace Shawn.
Oh, wow.
We were talking about his episode on American Splendor. Like, hey, man, while you're at it, can you sign this book of poetry by Leonard Boy for me? What a delightful man. Okay.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
I can't think of a better way to start wrapping up this show than with that.
There you go.
Yeah, golly, speaking of Catwoman, there was a guy, a different person, who wanted all these artists to draw Catwoman in the hot tub with him.
Really?
That's so... Oh, God.
And the thing is, he was already creepy to start with.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like, you know, oh, here's the Betty Crocker creepy icing.
Here's your creepy crock pot meal. Just leave it set for 8 hours while you're at work.
That's right. Guaranteed to creep you out when you get home.
Cool. Yeah. All right, Kelly, you're amazing. Thank you so much for classing up the joint. God.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You are like the Catwoman to our Batman.
You really are. Like you said, responsibility. Tell us more.
That's right. Yes, we're gonna bring you back for an episode all about that because we've heard tell of it.
We should do a responsibility episode and just we should just get reprimanded the entire time. just self-flagellate the entire time.
Did you remember not to nap before your own damn show?
Sometimes we don't have a choice, Cole.
Oh, thank you for being on. I absolutely adore it. Thank you so much.
It is always wonderful to have you on the show. And we're, of course, this is like I'm starting to invoke some of this responsibility.
There you go.
He does that to remind me. We are coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. We Andy has been just really burning up the old Hey Kids Comics Facebook page, and occasionally it's been a long time, but I may eventually tweet again at the Jedi Cult U.
I'm never gonna tweet again.
The feet of God, no random.
And be sure and look for me every on the first and third Sundays of every month over at DallasOnAir.com for the Rancor Pit Live with the amazing Eddie Medina, who will be our guest next week, as a matter of fact, on this show. And on the first Sundays of every month, Rancor Pit Live is 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central. On the first Sunday of every month, Eddie and Colleen, the Cryptid Couple, bring you Figments, the Unexplained Mysteries podcast, live from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. And on the third Sundays of every month, third Sundays, yes, there are so many third Sundays every month, I have Isle of Toys, where I explore all kinds of different types of toys. Especially love when I can bring guests on talking about things I don't personally know that much about. And in another case, this coming third Sunday of May, for my May episode, my dad will be joining me, and we'll be talking about 10 toys and the toys of yesteryear, and I cannot wait.
Fun.
All two words, clucking chicken. You have to tune in the show and see this thing. It is the most brilliant piece of analog toy and great for those long car trips, as you can well imagine. Sure. So with that, I'm going to hand you back to Andy.
Oh, well, again, thank you. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Cole. This has been an exciting two issues. I'm really glad we got to take this exploration. Next week, we are going to completely shirk our responsibilities, bring Eddie on this bad boy, and talk about toys. So suck it, responsibility. With that being said, everybody, buy, collect, enjoy your comics, and you too are invited July 4th to the pending nuptials for one Bruce Wayne and one Selina Kyle. We hope we'll be there. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.